You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Benjamin.
Hi, how's it going, Mike?
Going well, thank you. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Sure, yeah.
Hey, Benjamin, for the people that haven't stumbled across you, introduce yourself. Tell us why you're here.
My name's Benjamin Jolly. I am a pharmacist. I manage my dad's pharmacy here in Salt Lake City, Utah. I somehow have become a resident expert amongst folks on social media about DIR fees, among other things.
I put out a question to say, hey, who would you like on the show? And I love the response on one of yours that came back. It said, get Benjamin on there and just let him talk. So I don't know if that was because they wanted to hear you so much or because they didn't want to hear me, but regardless, that was our command. So Benjamin, give me a picture just of your day. Are you in a store? Are you in an office? What are you doing mostly during your work time?
I work about 25 to 30 hours on the bench and the rest doing management stuff, scheduling my people, and recently trying to hassle PBMs to give us contracts. We've rolled the dice on deciding to not use a PSAO starting 14 days ago, and it has been an adventure.
Yeah, we're in the same exact boat as you are. I know my son is pretty active on some of the Facebook groups that you're on, and that has been our adventure too now.
Yeah. I mean, it has gone much better than I expected from the perspective of how our patients have taken it. Like, there have been so many folks that have just said, oh, yeah, I will call my insurance, hassle them, because a couple of them have just said, we'll add you sometime in the future, because we left our PSAO on 1-1, and it's now 14 days later, and we're sitting here. Two of the major health plans in our area were not contracted with, and so we're not able to bill claims for them, but a surprising number of people have wanted to go to bat for us to hassle their health plan to say, hey, tell your PBM to contract with Jolly's. So that's been gratifying that our patients like us.
Yeah, right. All right, let's round back on that. You're at the store 30-some hours. You're doing some of your own work in the background, the management stuff and that, and putting on your gloves with the PSAOs and PBMs and so on. When is your social Facebook time? When are you doing that? Through the day? Or no, do you have a certain time for that?
When I go home at night. After the kids are in bed, pretty much.
That's when you come alive with the Facebook and social media stuff.
Yeah. And, yeah. So after the kids are in bed, I hop on there. And as a result of that, I started getting a lot of people asking me questions. So many that I didn't really have time to answer them all.
Right.
And so I started a side business of answering people's questions about this kind of stuff.
Nice.
And so I took some inspiration from you, actually, and another person that uses Calendly. And set up a little scheduling page where folks can pay me by credit card. And then I have time to see them because they're giving me money.
Whoa, that's cool. All right, let me march back just a bit. When you started on Facebook and that, was your intention to blow off some steam or to...
Yeah.
Or to get any advice or to start anything? What was your main intention when you started getting more active on the social scene with all the DIR crap and all that? What was your first intention?
Mostly it was to figure out how other people were dealing with stuff, and then also to blow off some steam.
Right.
And there were a lot of folks who, and still are today, a lot of folks who have some really fantastic ideas and really know a lot more than me about working the system, as it were.
Yeah.
But it rapidly became apparent in blowing off steam and talking to people that there were repeated questions about, hey, how do you guys deal with these DIR fees? How do you deal with this GER? And shortly after the page that I'm on with a number of other people, the news hit of a number of PSAOs clawing back a huge amount of money from their member pharmacies because of the generic effective rate provisions in their contracts with the PBMs.
Yeah.
That surprised me, to say the least. I had not heard of a GER before that.
Were those live clawbacks, or were those coming later in the mixed in with the retroactive, like, DIR stuff?
Well, so the moment where I heard about it was when Epic Pharmacy Network, when they were truing up, I believe it was their Caremark contract, they somehow found themselves in the position of owing Caremark something on the order of, like, $25, $30 million, several percentage points of AWP. They had no idea what was happening. It seemed that they didn't even realize this was in the contract that they had signed. And Caremark had come to them and said, hey, you owe us this money. And they said, what do I do? And so there was just all of these stories about pharmacies being hit with, like, hey, you owe us $20,000. I'm going to need it in a week.
And that's because the PSAO got hit, and thus they went to the pharmacy and hit them.
Mm-hmm.
Was it one of those where it wasn't even, like, defined what it was for? And in fact, was it just divided somehow by the PSAO, and they might not have even known what pharmacy it was for?
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure how they handled it on their end. What it seems like, based on the fact that some folks got like a 20,000, some folks got like 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
The most outlandish case that caught my attention was one pharmacy was told, hey, you owe us like $15 million. I'm going to need that money next week. And it's like, if we got that kind of bill, we would be out of business immediately.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we cannot handle a $15 million retroactive fee.
That's on the level of a mental breakdown. I mean, you hear about people going in and, well, hurting themselves or shooting up places or something like that. So these audits or these letters that come with these huge things that people have no idea coming, they're more than just, in my mind, more than just a, you know, saying this is impossible. It's like, sometimes it's like life ending.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, so that one I heard about because Friar Levitt, the law firm, put out a statement about they had acquired a, an injunction against Epic on behalf of this pharmacy saying, hey, you can't claw this money back from us until such a time as we've been through this in the court. Mm-hmm. And that was where I started to dig into this, was just, what in the world happened there?
Yeah.
Then I started obsessively researching it.
And at the same time, you're pumping out some questions on social to say, hey, what, you know, you're trying to get more information because you were not in this actual position, but you knew that it could as easily happen to you.
Right. And I was sitting there like, okay, when does the other shoe drop for me?
Right.
Then I went to the PDS conference, and they had some fantastic speakers who were former PBM auditors that, like, started their own consulting company to help pharmacies avoid losing money in audits.
Right.
And they spoke about GER and explained it in a way that was just so incredibly clear. I was like, okay, I see what happened there. I had these two pictures of basically bar graphs where 100 was AWP, 0 was 0% of AWP. And they're like, okay, the PBM pays you at AWP minus 25, but the generic effective rate is AWP minus 87. This is what they're clawing back in the GER, is the difference between those two numbers. And then if they're paying you below that, they'll pay you back that amount.
And Benjamin, for our listeners, as simple as you can, give us what GER is supposed to be.
Sure. So GER stands for generic effective rate. So it is a term invented by PBMs to define a given discount off of AWP for generic drugs. From my understanding, it began with several years ago, PBMs would use GER as a contracting tool with their employer and payer clients rather than with their pharmacy partners. And so they would say, hey, Walmart, hey, whoever, we will ensure, like, we will accept the risk to make sure that you, the client, pays no more than AWP minus 80% on the average for all the generic drugs that you get. And, of course, they manipulate it so that high AWP single-source drugs get classified as brands and don't become part of this calculation for those purposes. Mm. But it's a form of insurance risk, right? Where they are saying, I will accept the risk for doing, for managing your drug list, managing the MAC list, so that it hits this specific discount off of AWP. And that to me was enlightening, realizing that end payers that contract with PBMs generally do not think in terms of dollars and cents that are paid out for generics. They think in terms of discount off AWP.
Mm-hmm.
I had encountered that a couple of years before this, while I was in pharmacy school. I was at a consulting company that end payers hire to basically audit their PBM and make sure that the PBM isn't ripping them off,
mm-hmm.
Which the fact that they exist tells you something. but they had this reporting system for their clients in which they would say, yeah, you're achieving this percentage discount off AWP, you're achieving for generics, for specialty drugs, for brand drugs. And I remember one phone call with a client at that consulting company in which we said, you client are achieving an effective rate of AWP minus 99%. And they're like, that's fantastic. And everyone starts laughing and I'm just sitting there horrified. And I'm like, how in the name, how do you achieve AWP minus 99 across all of your claims?
Yeah.
Like that is some aggressive contracts with your pharmacies.
Yeah.
Like who can make a profit with that? My goodness.
If I heard that, in my mind, it's stupidly so. It's like when the car places say, we're going to sell you a car at our invoice cost. It's like, no, you're not, because we know something's happening. So when you hear AWP minus 99, someone's got to figure something's up, or that's not realistic, right?
I would hope so, but everyone on that call, the client, the consultants that weren't me, we're all just laughing their heads off that they had achieved this incredibly wonderful discount off AWP. But so anyway, that was my first exposure to this, and then I saw more of it later, and what I realized is that the PBMs had just moved the insurance risk that they had with the clients, they just pushed it down to the pharmacies. Down to the PSAOs, really, starting probably 2 or 3 years ago.
The risk is not on them. They're telling, the risk is on the pharmacy for being, whatever, stupid enough to sign up for the plan. The risk on the pharmacy is we'll sell you everything at AWP minus something. And the only risk for the PBM is if there's an uprising or they get found out. They're just passing that risk along to the next person down the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty genius contracting strategy, actually. You just contract with the client for AWP minus 80 and contract with the pharmacy at AWP minus 85. You lock in 5% of AWP profit. Boom.
Right.
And you don't even have to manage MAC lists anymore, which is how they used to have to do this, is they'd set a MAC price for each of the drugs based on invoice costs, and then they would just try to make sure that on the average, based on their utilization, that MAC list hit a certain AWP minus.
Gotcha.
And that was how they judged the quality of a given MAC list, was what percent off AWP are we achieving here.
Gotcha.
Anyway, now they've just said, okay, hey, pharmacy, we'll just pay you AWP minus 85, 82, whatever. They're locked in there with a given profit because they contract with the client at a different GER than they contract with you at. And so now you, the pharmacy, if you dispense items that you pay, you know, AWP minus 25 for, that are like brand new generics, and you're getting paid at AWP minus 80, well, sucks to be you. But on the other hand, if you manipulate your dispensing so that you dispense a lot of ondansetron, you will do very, very well.
These are some of the drugs that we actually saw some advice from pharmacy organizations saying to play this route of trying to get the doctors, if they write for this drug, try to get them to write instead for this drug, which has a huge AWP, and the actual cost is maybe 5% of that AWP.
Right. Where I think the GER being pushed down to the pharmacies came from was PDS and others promoted a strategy with pharmacies of finding drugs that were non-MAC items. So they would pay at the contract rate, which typically in PSAO contracts, the contract rate is somewhere like, if we don't have a MAC price and you submit a charge higher than this, we'll pay you at AWP minus 25%.
Okay.
And so there's some drugs where the actual cost is like AWP minus 85%.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a MAC on it. They pay AWP minus 25%. Before generic effective rate was a thing, that's fantastic. You just pocketed like 60% of AWP on something that has like a $20,000 AWP or something crazy.
Right.
This, I think, is how some pharmacies ended up with a generic effective rate true up of like $20 million because they were making like $20 million by billing these incredibly high spread items between AWP and cost.
For example, a dermatologist in town is writing for a certain cream that somehow missed the MAC viewing, you know, and it got by and there's this big spread. And so they're trying to maybe press this, that it's probably not a common drug or else it would have been, you know, caught.
Right. Exactly. Or, you know, weird strengths of drugs that, like cyclobenzaprine, 7.5 milligrams.
Yeah, right.
Like these bizarre things that it's like, what is the point of this drug existing?
Yeah.
And why would someone want to prescribe that or dispense that over another? The reason is because it has just this huge spread between AWP and cost.
Yeah.
I have learned over the last year and a half that when there's something funny going on in pharmacy, there's probably AWP involved somewhere.
Right.
Which surprised me because, you know, in pharmacy school and in talking to pharmacy owners, the joke is it's ain't what's paid, right?
Right.
But I keep seeing these stories where again and again and again and again, the reason why there's something funny going on is because AWP is involved somewhere. It has no connection to the real price of the drug that the pharmacy pays. For brand name drugs, I should clarify that. For brand name drugs, there is a connection. You typically pay a fixed discount off of AWP. But for generic drugs, it has no connection whatsoever to the real price that the pharmacy pays.
Right.
For brand name drugs, the WAC is the like list price that everyone complains about. It keeps going up, right? Branded drugs, the price keeps going up, going up, going up. That's the price that the manufacturer sets. They say, I want $10,000 for this drug. That's the WAC that they set. And as it turns out, because of a legal settlement between First Data Bank, Medispan, McKesson, and a group of unions that sued those three parties, AWP for brand name drugs has a defined meaning. And the reason this happened was that they had manipulated it so that AWP was 1.25 times WAC, or 125% of WAC, so that they could pocket more money, right? Because if people are paying based on AWP and they're buying based on WAC, then if they can increase the spread between the two, fantastic. And so as a result of this lawsuit, there's now what's referred to as pre-settlement AWP and post-settlement AWP. So the lawsuit changed the definition of AWP from 1.25 times WAC to today it's 1.2 times WAC. And so that's a defined meaning. If you look at the WAC for a given drug, look at it for Zofran brand, look at it for Lyrica brand, look at it for any brand name drug, WAC times 1.2 is the AWP. And so that finding that out to me was a eye-opener, because now I can just look at a given contract from a PBM that offers AWP minus a certain percentage and say, okay, well, I'm paying my wholesaler at AWP minus this percentage. For brand name drugs, I'm going to be making 1%. I'm going to be making 2%.
It means something again.
Yes. So for brand name drugs, it means something. For generic drugs, usually AWP is the AWP of the reference brand drug. Or like a small discount off of it. So like if you look at the AWP for like Aurobindo brand ondansetron and you look at the AWP of brand name Zofran, you'll find that those are almost the exact same number. It's funny, but then you look at the actual cost, and the reason I bring up ondansetron is because I pulled into my I'm an Excel geek, and I went to as I was figuring out how this GER thing worked,
sure,
because it's about generic drugs, like not brand. Someone said, "Hey, does anyone have like a list of high AWP drugs that they can use?" And I'm like, "Well, I mean, you have one in your system, right? You can just suck out of your pharmacy software, assuming that it has the right data connections, which most do. You can suck out of it an item by item AWP and item by item invoice cost of what you last paid for it. Just pull those into Excel, divide the one by the other, sort by that division, and you've got a sorted list from top to bottom of highest discount off AWP for you to lowest discount. And the one that popped up at the top of my list was ondansetron, 8 milligrams oral tablet, not the orally disintegrating tablet. And it was literally like I pay AWP minus 99.99% for that drug. And I realized this, and another pharmacy owner said that he was selling his store and told me that the buyer was going to buy his inventory based off of the AWP value of it. And he's like, "What should I buy?" Yeah. This at the same time that I'm looking at this, and I'm like, "Well, how about buy, I don't know, $1,000 of ondansetron, 8 milligrams. You'll buy, I don't know, 200,000 tablets or something with that kind of money. And the value of your inventory on an AWP basis will increase by literally $500,000.
Someone's going to buy his store and they're going to pay AWP minus something, 20%, which is fictitiously high. And so the store owner said, "Hey, before I sell this, what can I buy that's really, really cheap but has a really high AWP?" And so I'm going to make a ton of money right before this sale by stocking up on a ton of these low price tablets. And then this guy who's coming to buy me is going to buy these at, you know, just below AWP, and I'm going to make a ton of money on that.
Right. I think the terms of the sale was like AWP minus 75%. But even then, he's pocketing like a $20,000 profit on those $1,000 worth of Ondansetron. Anyway, it was bonkers thinking about that. The game has changed, though, basically, of how does a pharmacy make money in today's environment? From, okay, where can I find all of these items that the PBM has not set a MAC for? To, well, MAC is basically a lie, because they're just going to pay me at GER at the end of the day anyways.
Am I understanding correctly that you should then just find the biggest spread, find the one that has the highest AWP, and then I guess the difference in cost?
Just calculate the difference in cost to AWP, and you've won the GER game, right? If you dispense exclusively on Ondansetron, you've just pocketed a huge profit, because it costs you, like I said, like 0.01% of AWP. You're going to sell it effectively. They'll MAC you at, like, I don't know, just above your cost. And so short term, you'll get paid basically garbage. But when the true up for the GER happens, assuming that you're under a contract where it hits the store level rather than just getting spread across all the pharmacies in a PSAO.
Yeah.
If it's at the store level, your store is going to just get paid at AWP minus even 90%. If you were dispensing exclusively on Ondansetron, you're going to pocket 90% profit margin on those.
Right.
Or more. One example of a drug that actually... So you almost never see a decrease in AWP. It's almost unheard of. And on one of the pages that I'm on, someone pointed out that Heritage brand Metformin had a huge drop in its AWP, from something like $500-$600 for $1,000 bottle to like $18. And all of a sudden, its AWP actually has some kind of relationship to its cost. Mm-hmm. It probably costs the pharmacy like $10.
Right.
And so you've gone from paying like AWP minus 99 to like paying AWP minus like 20. And in a generic effective rate environment, that is not beneficial for the pharmacy to buy that drug anymore, even if it's the cheapest one on the market.
Right.
It sucks for the pharmacy. And so he's like, just go throw... The person who was bringing this up said, these Heritage brand ones, I just got screwed. I'm going to take these and just go throw them in my trash.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm going to lose money on them. To be clear, I have been explaining this from the perspective of someone who's trying to win this game of how do I stay in business.
Right.
I would vastly prefer a system that does not pay pharmacies in this way.
Yeah.
There are better ways. Medicaid fee-for-service has to pay pharmacies on a different basis. They don't pay on an AWP basis. So Medicaid fee-for-service, not necessarily managed care where a PBM is managing.
Yeah.
In some states, even those have to also pay pharmacies on this basis. But there's a different basis of reimbursement for pharmacies called NADAC, or National Average Drug Acquisition Cost. And it is based on a survey of pharmacies that Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services sends out every week to a selected group of pharmacies and says, hey, I want all of your invoices from last month. I want to know what your invoice prices were on all these drugs. And then they use a company called Myers & Stauffer to aggregate all of that data and publish a per tablet price or per milliliter price that is based off of the average of all of these pharmacies that submit their invoices. And it actually has meaning, right? Because it's what is on your invoice.
Sure.
The way that Medicaid pays is rather than paying a pharmacy just some discount off of AWP or some made-up price that they call a MAC, they're paying pharmacies the national average drug acquisition cost plus a fixed markup per prescription of a fee for dispensing the prescription to cover the pharmacist's time, to cover the overhead. Because under the AWP system, the way the pharmacy makes money is not a professional service fee. Pharmacies under those AWP contracts get paid like a spread on the drug plus like 20 cents, 30 cents, 50 cents.
Yeah.
You can't run a pharmacy on 50 cents a prescription.
No.
It is not possible. That money is helpful, right? You wouldn't, if someone offered you some AWP linked contract plus a 50 cents or plus a dollar, all else equal, obviously you'd take the dollar, but it's not going to, it does not cover the cost of doing business.
No, it doesn't even pay to blink.
Just in fees that you pay, like,
yeah, to the switch and stuff.
When you receive a prescription from SureScripts,
yeah,
typically you pay them like a quarter.
Right.
There's half of your profit gone, right? Yeah. If the AWP-based game was actually based on cost.
Right.
So like, that's a quarter right there.
Yeah.
You submit the claim to the insurance. You've just paid the switch 7 cents. Mm-hmm. If you have to resubmit the claim because you got a rejection, there's another 7 cents.
Yeah.
Just that right there, you've already just made it so that the pharmacy can pay their staff based on, like, 10 cents a prescription. Pharmacists cost a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
I would hope.
Even if you just dumped out a few tablets into the 30 tablets into the person's hand, you've already wiped out any fee of the service. I don't even know why they have that still in the equation.
What's incredible is that, like, these effective rate contracts now also have a dispense fee effective rate, where it's like, I mean, the 50 cents per prescription is basically nothing for the pharmacy, but for a PBM, that is money, right? Because if they are paying pharmacies for, I think last year in aggregate, pharmacies dispensed somewhere on the order of 3 billion prescriptions.
Sure.
If you're paying pharmacies 50 cents a script for 3 billion prescriptions.
Right.
That's $1.5 billion.
Yeah, it adds up for them.
Right. It adds up big time. And so if you can shave that by 5 cents, 10 cents, 20 cents per prescription, you've just increased your profit margin by, you know, a good fraction of $1 billion.
Right.
I never actually finished the idea with how Medicaid pays pharmacies. They pay them with this actual cost, basically, plus typically somewhere on the order of $10 to $20 per prescription.
Okay.
In Utah, it's $9.99, which isn't really fantastic.
Sure.
From every survey I've ever seen, it costs a pharmacy somewhere between $11 and $15 per prescription to
sure.
just cover their overhead.
Right.
And so $9.99 a script is not great, but frankly, at this point, it's actually better than a lot of the reimbursements that I'm getting under the AWP game.
Right.
Under that game, my favorite prescription I ever dispensed was one for lisinopril 90 tablets. I was paid 47 cents total.
Ridiculous.
I can make more money selling a Snickers
yeah.
than selling lisinopril, which can cause horrific side effects. Right?
right.
This is why pharmacists are struggling to find jobs.
Yeah.
A number of my friends from pharmacy school, I only graduated 2 years ago, and a number of my friends from pharmacy school are already looking for jobs, right? Their hours got cut. Walgreens cut all of their pharmacists to like 32 hours a week. That's full time.
Yeah.
And that's what you get paid off of.
Yeah.
And you're salaried. And so if you work more than that, well, that sucks for you. Thank you for your volunteering. Yeah. Like Walmart laid off something like 1,000 pharmacists nationwide. And
yeah, right.
But the reason is that we're getting paid, the pharmacies are getting paid garbage, like 40 cents a script.
Since about, let's say like 5 years ago, maybe longer, I would just tell myself, you know what? Don't look at any of this. You're going to get little headaches along the way. At the end of the day, the whole mix is there. It's profitable. Stop looking at the individual ones. So in the last year or two, now the checkbook is, you know, dusty. There's nothing left. And so now it's like we still are probably not going to look at individual ones, but we know the whole batch is terrible. You know, it is terrible now. Here's the thing, too, is like the wholesalers, the PSAOs, the PBMs, they all thrive on smoke and mirrors because we're paying in our pharmacy, you're paying X million dollars for the inventory. And I would always do this with our wholesaler. At least you can talk to those guys. Usually you still have at least a face behind the name. And I'd go in there and I'd say, you know, for example, Bob, tell me how much this bottle of ibuprofen is. And I'd set it down, you know, 500 count. I'd set it down on the table. Tell me how much this is. Well, you got it. There's going to be the rebates and then this. And then if you go to the show and do this, and then 3 months later, we'll do this and blah, blah. I said, you got to be kidding me. I'm paying you X million dollars. And I feel like I'm talking to someone worse than a used car salesman. You know, you can't tell me how much this costs. And we're still dealing with rebates and games when, I mean, you play rebates and games maybe to get a customer, but not with a customer that you've been for 20 years and you're buying X million dollars, you know, and nobody can give you the answer. And that's all planned.
Yeah, exactly. Like the whole pharmacy system thrives on fake prices.
Sure. Well, in fact, what you described, if they could throw out everything and start over, what you described with Medicaid is the average wholesale price. That's what it was. It was what people are.
What a concept.
Yeah. When does the, if that's the kind of the, what you found now, how long does that work? How long, when does the PBM come back and say, no, we're going to put MAC in place again, or we're not going to go off of this high AWP or whatever. We're used to having doom and gloom at the end of these things. We can't just come up with answers. That wouldn't be like the industry we've been in.
Sure. So I don't think that the PBMs are going to divorce the GER concept unless they're forced to by lawsuits or by otherwise, because it aligns the pharmacy's best interest with the PBM's best interest. Because remember, they contract with an employer to say, I will make sure that you hit an AWP minus X percentage. Mm. And then they contract with the pharmacy, I will pay you AWP minus X minus 2% or whatever. And so that way, the higher the AWP that the pharmacy submits, the better the PBM is, right? So long as they're paying the pharmacy less than they're paying the other guy,
right?
They're pocketing 2% of AWP no matter what. And so the higher the AWP that gets submitted, the more money the PBM rakes in.
It's more actual money. The dollar figure is higher if the pharmacy can find a higher AWP. And in theory, they both win.
Right.
The buyer beware or whatever is really the company, the widget company with 100 employees that hired this PBM.
Yeah, they're getting screwed.
They're getting screwed, and the only way they find out is then by trying to make their way through the smoke and mirrors and comparing PBMs when they have to, you know, or insurances when they have to sign up again in a year or 3 years or 5 years, whatever their contract is.
I do not think that the PBMs are going to divorce that concept.
That's interesting.
Because it's how they get paid. And so if they can just keep the pharmacies fat and happy, or keep their own pharmacies fat and happy even better, playing this game, better off for them. Like I said, whenever I see funny business with pricing in pharmacy, AWP, every time.
Right. That's the magic trick. That's the one you can twirl it around because it's already false.
Right.
You might say.
I saw a thing shared on Facebook that was making a big stink about how this pharmacy had dispensed generic Glumetza to somebody for their cost on it was like $120. The PBM macked them, paid them like $150. So they're happy. They get paid a $30 profit on the script. In today's environment, that's pretty darn good. But then the patient's coverage was terminated. So then the patient's insurance company comes after them 6 months later and says, hey, I'm going to need you to pay me back what I paid for this drug. The insurance company is not the PBM. The PBM is not the pharmacy. And so we've got, and the insurance company is also not the one who's buying insurance on behalf of this person, right?
Sure.
So we've got first-party patient, second-party pharmacy, third-party employer, fourth-party insurance, fifth-party PBM.
Yeah.
In this transaction. And so the PBM pays the pharmacy $155, of which $40 is a copay for the patient. But then the patient gets a bill from their insurance 6 months later for $1,200.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there looking at this, and I'm like, that's weird. Something's going on here.
Right.
So I got out a calculator and added up the amount that the insurance was asking for back from the patient, plus their copay, divided that by the AWP for the item. Guess what the amount that apparently Anthem paid their PBM for this drug was?
Tell me.
AWP minus 25% on the nose. Isn't that incredible? Like, the largest Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in the country somehow pays their PBM for a generic drug, AWP minus 25%. And then the PBM goes and pays the pharmacy, you know, AWP minus 89%, pockets the difference. Like $1,000 of spread there for the PBM.
You got to back up for me. I'm a little slow on this.
You're good.
When you were talking about the PBM's AWP minus percentage and what the pharmacy was buying it for, it seems like you kept saying like 2%.
That was my assumption, but apparently it's much better than that with Anthem.
I see. You thought, let's say the pharmacy buys at AWP minus 80 and the PBM pays at AWP minus 75. You thought the assumption was maybe that Anthem or whoever's paying the PBM was maybe paying them AWP minus 70. So there's 10% to go around here. Everybody's happy. But you found it was AWP minus 25.
For this particular claim, yeah.
Here's the question, though. Hasn't that been always common knowledge that the PBM is screwing the Anthem's? Hasn't that always been that spread? Isn't that where that complaint of the PBMs has been? Why does that? I know it's shocking, but why does that shock you now?
I had thought that Anthem was a more sophisticated buyer.
Tell me the difference between Anthem and a widget company with 100 employees. Are they the same, or is the Anthem like another middleman who then sells the drugs to the widget company?
Exactly. So Anthem, their business is selling health insurance, right?
Yeah.
And so they sell a widget company a health insurance policy where they will collect, you know, $1,000 a month in premiums per person.
Gotcha.
And then they'll pay out whatever percentage to the PBM, to the to the physician, to the hospital, whoever. And then theoretically, whatever's left, they keep.
They're not charging the widget company per prescription and so on. They're just hoping that there's profit left.
Insurance companies are complex, and there's a lot of different ways that they can contract.
Gotcha.
Right.
Does a widget company ever skip Anthem and go right to a PBM?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've done a lot of reading about this. I've been very fascinated by a group that calls themselves the Health Rosetta. Which basically their thesis is that the cost of healthcare, like of actually providing services, has not gone up in the last 10 years.
Interesting.
And so what has gone up is the price point that everyone in the system tries to take. So a sophisticated employer who hires a smart benefits advisors can design a health plan that will bring their healthcare costs down to like 2010 levels.
Yeah, right.
And they see it over and over and over and over and over again, because we've been talking about the fake prices in pharmacy, but the whole healthcare system's full of fake prices. It's the whole game. Like, a hospital has their charge master that says that a ibuprofen costs $20, a single tablet. And then they negotiate with the PPO and say, we'll give you 50% off charge master, or 60% or 70%.
Yeah.
But it's the whole charge a crazy high price, give you a great discount off of it. That's exactly the same game that we're playing with AWP on the pharmacy side. In the health plan side, they're playing the exact same markup and discount game. That's something that actually some of these guys that I've been following have said, is like, look, I will give you a 99% discount on anything you want so long as I get set the starting point.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. I'll give you a 99% discount every single day if I get to set the starting point for it.
That's life.
What amazes me is that employers and other end payers, Medicaid plans, Medicare plans, keep paying on these just discounts off of fake numbers.
Here's why. They're sitting around a boardroom and nobody wants to get out a list of 1,000 drugs and say, okay, Mr. President, we bought this one for $2.99 and we're going to get this one for $23.78 instead of, you know, $26.95. And it's like, nobody's doing that. What they want to hear is they want to say, Smothers, give me your report. Well, we're buying it for 99% off of cost. Oh, great. We'll give you a, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just easier, and then people fall for
it. Right, exactly. Their whole thesis, though, is that, like, the underlying costs, paying physicians, paying pharmacists, of providing healthcare services hasn't really gone up.
No.
And so if you're smart about it and you make sure that your employees go to the right hospital that has a reasonable price point for this, for the service, even if you pay them 100% of their price for it,
yeah,
you're going to save money.
Yeah.
Because, like, hospitals have incredible price variation for the same exact procedure. Like, you say, okay, I want to know what the price point is for doing open heart surgery to repair, to like a quadruple coronary bypass or something like that.
Yeah.
If you look at a sample of 10 hospitals, you could find a price between, like, I don't know, $30,000 and $500,000.
Yeah.
And so if you get 50% off of $500,000, you're still paying like 25 times too much.
Right.
And so if you just make sure that your employee goes to the $20,000 hospital, who cares? And so the idea is that they build a plan in which if the employee asks where they should get care before they go and they follow the health plan's advice, they don't have a deductible. They can go wherever they want, but they'll have to pay their deductible. And so you have like a $2,000 deductible for the average person in the country. That's a lot of money, right? And
right.
So if they can pay $0 by going to the $20,000 hospital instead of paying $2,000 by going to the $500,000 hospital, the health plan, that's a, like, the employer, that's money in the bank, right? Like, I'm not going to have my employee pay $2,000 because I just saved like $100,000 by not sending them to that hospital. And so, anyway, I've been following these guys, and they talk a lot about the incentives that the major health carriers have, like Blue Cross Blue Shield, United, Cigna, Aetna, Humana. All of these big carriers, under the Obamacare law, and this relates back to that story I was telling about the AWP NS25. What I realized is I think that Anthem is a sophisticated buyer of pharmacy services, and I think they're deliberately paying Caremark, or whoever their PBM is. I think it's Caremark. I think they're deliberately paying them at AWP -25. It's not a mistake. I don't think it's that they are just stupid and not buying drugs cheaply because they're stupid. I think it's because they have a different profit model than most people think. So
unknown to us?
Unknown to most people who aren't in health insurance, right?
Unknown to you, or do you think you know?
No, I think I know. I think I know what's going on. Obamacare put into place a rule called the medical loss ratio, which most folks haven't heard of. And if they have heard of it, they think it's a great thing. It says that if you are a health insurance carrier, you have to spend at least 80% of the premiums that you collect on actual care rather than on administration in the health plan or on profit. So in pharmacy terms, we would call that remaining 20% the gross profit margin, right? And okay. then you pay for your overhead out of that, and your net profit's whatever's sure. left. But what that does is it means that any way that I, as a health plan, can conceal administrative costs as though they were care provided, the better off for me.
Sure.
Right, because if I pay out more dollars,
right,
then I can raise premiums next year and make more money because it's still 20%. 20% of a higher number, I make more money.
Gotcha.
And so if I can conceal some of the administrative costs that I have, like, you know, paying a PBM is an administrative cost. The PBM is an administrative function, not really a care service provided.
Hmm.
But if the PBM, if I pay the PBM based off of spread on drug, and I never see the true price for the drug, it looks like I'm paying for care. Does that make sense?
It looks like you're paying for
care. For care okay. provided, right? For actual yes. medical costs, not for administration. Yes. And so they pay Caremark or whoever their PBM is, AWP minus 25 on generics. That lets Caremark have a substantial profit margin, and then Caremark doesn't have to charge Anthem an administrative fee for the services that they provide. Where if they paid Caremark in a more reasonable way, which, like, if I were designing a health plan,
I gotcha.
I would pay Caremark, or I probably wouldn't pay Caremark. I'd sure. probably choose some small PBM, and I would pay them $10 per member per month to
right.
just pay out the claims, and then I would say, and I want you to just send me the costs for the exact yeah. cost, and then I'll pay the pharmacy exactly that amount.
Let me see if I have this, if I may. Yeah. With the Obama law, Anthem, the most gross profit they can have is 20%, and their net profit gets cut down of that 20%. The more admin fees they pay and the more stuff they pay, that's going to eat away at that 20% and maybe leave them with 5%. If they can put that into the AWP only minus 25%, the PBM is happy because they got enough money. They don't need to actually line item out. They might line item a few things, but they don't have to line item out all of the profit they want to make from Anthem. And then Anthem can say, oh, geez, out of the 20% gross profit, PBM only charges to 1% instead of, you know, 15 or whatever percent they would want to charge them.
Right. And in addition to that, like, there's the other side of it, right, where if they're paying the PBM as though it is care provided, that means that they now have, rather than, like, having to pay them 5% of the 20% as admin fees, that 5% is now part of the 80%, right, of care provided. And so that 20% is now a bigger number. They can lock in an incredibly high profit margin for the PBM on just spread on drug rather than on administrative fees.
You didn't say this, Benjamin, and I'm not saying it. And we're not saying Anthem is doing this by any means, but there could be some players in the market that are getting some rebates or something back from this AWP only minus 25, there might be some coming in the back door back to them.
I mean, that's something that I have wondered a lot, is we know that PBMs negotiate formulary rebates with brand name manufacturers. They say, hey, I'm going to cover Ozempic rather than covering Trulicity. So, hey, Ozempic, I want 20% of the price that I paid you for it back, that I paid the pharmacy for it back, because I chose your drug over the other one, or I want 50% back.
Yeah.
And I have wondered a lot whether those rebates are accounted for in this medical loss ratio.
Gotcha. If that's part of that 80-20, or where does that show up?
Like, where does it show up? Does it show up above or below that 20%, 80% line? Or does it show up at all? Or is it just funny money that just appears in the bank account and no one accounts for it, right? Anyway, the whole system is just based on these fake prices that we all discount, and then we hit, you know, when we hit the discount, everyone's happy, except the person on the very end receiving of all of these prices is the widget company or the hotel company or whoever.
We don't think it's the insurer. They've got some reason for this. Maybe it's someone on that far end.
Right. And so this is what bugs me about playing all of these GER games as a pharmacy and playing all of these games as anyone in the healthcare system is we are making a profit by helping the PBM make a profit, by making the health carrier make a profit on the backs of blue-collar workers who are making widgets and who are seeing their premiums and their deductibles go up every single year, 5%, 10%.
Yeah.
And so that's what bugs me about this whole thing is that if we as pharmacy owners and pharmacists buy into this game and play the PBM's game, we are screwing over all of our neighbors.
Right.
Who pay the PBM at the end of the day.
Yeah.
A lot of pharmacists think, oh yeah, I'm going to screw the PBM. I'll do this, 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 this. You're not screwing the PBM. That's the bottom line for me, is that it's never, ever, the PBM's going to make a profit. They're going to take their spread. You are not screwing them over by playing these games. You're screwing over your neighbor. And that's what bugs me about this whole thing. You're not taking the money out of the PBM's pocket. Pharmacists always act that way, like, oh yeah, well, they don't treat us as right, so I'm going to treat them crappy. But they're never the one that's actually paying for it. Ever.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out of their pocket.
No, it's the owner of the widget company who then has to lay off some people or make their prices go so high that then they can't go on vacation or lose their job, whatever.
Yeah.
We have to get to work.
Yeah. We have pharmacies to run.
Golly, this was so interesting. How can people at least get a hold of you, at least to see who you are and your wonderful ramblings, I guess we'll call them. But
that was that guy who asked us to do the show was saying, can you just let him ramble for an hour? That was his exact words. And that's what I guess we've done.
Did he say ramble? He said ramble. On Facebook?
He said ramble.
All right, well, yeah. I didn't want to say it, but Benjamin, if people want to just get to know you a little bit more, they'd probably look you up on Facebook, right?
That's probably a good place to start. Yep.
See some of your ramblings. And then we're going to get you back on. I want to hear more about some of your consulting stuff. And I know you've got some recorded information coming out. We'll get you back on for that. For right now, head to Facebook. And until we get you back on, Benjamin, thank you for everything, for what you're doing for the industry. And
it's fun, huh?
Yeah, yeah. But that's some great information, and I appreciate all you do for everyone, and thanks for spending time with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks, Benjamin. We'll talk again soon. You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.